You're listening to Comedy Central.
Welcome to episode 54 of the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project.
JRVP.
Junior Vice President.
Bitch, real G's move in silence like spaghetti.
I feel like we needed another bar there. We needed to know what that rhymed. Jeselnik.
Everyone knows what that's referring to. I looked up, but you don't know the actual lyric? I changed the lyric.
Please.
It's Lil Wayne's most famous lyric.
Say it again.
Bitch, real G's move in silence like spaghetti. I changed lasagna to spaghetti.
We're off to a banging start.
I'm shocked that you didn't know, that you didn't get the reference. I thought that would make you laugh and you'd be like, but the G in spaghetti is not silent.
Yeah.
The more I explain the joke, I think the better it gets. I think that's why people tune into the podcast.
That's why people tune into Lil Wayne. The wordplay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Greg Rosenthal, by the way. I'm
Jesus
an NFL.com
Christ.
Writer. And I've been best friends with Anthony Jeselnik, world famous comedian, for over 20 years. And this is the podcast where we being me and the producer, Erica Tambosi, just try to stay out of the way and let Anthony shine. It's really his starring vehicle, as it should be.
Shining is what I tell Erica to do. I feel like you're kind of stepping on my toes already, like right in the beginning. It's like you don't take any of the notes that I give you during the previous podcasts, and then you just kind of do whatever you want, which is not what this podcast is all about. You know, this podcast is about friendship. It's about football. It's about living with mistakes you make. Very excited to be back for episode 54. Just 16 left until the end of the season, which always thrills me. It was a good week. As everyone knows, I had my first Largo show that I talked about last week, and it was great. I got like 20, 25 minutes just kind of screwing around. It's fun to go from the Comedy Store, where people were kind of like, oh, what's going to happen here, to the Largo, where people know exactly what they're getting. It was a really fun show, so I'll be doing that every month. From now on. So if you live in LA or you're visiting LA, check out Largo, Google Largo, and there's only one website for it, and get tickets to my monthly show that I'll be doing until I have a new 45 and I can go back on the road and stop doing this podcast.
Well, what were there any jokes, you know, in this new 2025 that after doing it at Largo, you're like, okay, I'm killing this?
There were like two brand new ones that I tried, that one was just like, no. Like, it was like absolutely not. It was something that I thought was like kind of stupid funny. Sometimes when I write new jokes, I like to try them out, even though I know they'll never make it into my act. Like, my act doesn't have a lot of silly stuff in it.
But it should have more. A lot of my favorite stuff is some of the silly stuff.
Yeah, but the silly stuff has to work in like a hard way that sometimes it's just like goofy. That it's funny that I'm saying it, and I like to try some of those out just because the audience kind of cracks up and it's like, of course I'm axing this, but.
Why do you trust the audience so much, or at least trust it like the first time around? Or do you need to hear it a few? Like, what if that joke didn't work that night, but it was going to work the next seven?
I can tell different laughs, and sometimes it's like if it's like zero, I'm like, this joke doesn't work at all. If there's like a chuckle or like someone, like one guy laughs really hard, I'm like, I'll try it again. If I believe in a joke, even if it doesn't do that well, I'll keep on trying it until the audience eventually talks me out of it. It's like, why do I have this, like, all these jokes kill, and then I have this one that's just for me that, like, suffers? I end up taking it out, even if I love it.
Do you respect that audience a lot more than our podcast audience, who you've said you don't respect?
I don't respect, like, even, like, I would never be like, please buy tickets to the show, or please listen to our podcast. If you want to come to the show, great. It's going to sell out anyway. So I'm not going to like beg anyone, but it is a good audience, and it's just different from the Comedy Store, where I'm like one of many comics versus like everyone's there to see me. Like, I had four openers, and everyone's just like, where's Anthony? Like, I've got to host the show just so people don't like just leave while my openers are on stage, even though they all do great. But it's fun for me. I get to kind of screw around and hang out with friends and gossip. The owner of Largo is one of the great gossips in comedy and knows all, like, knows everybody's shit, and he's the kind of person you want to share. Like, he'll tell you a story and you're like, oh well, I heard this, and then you're like, you shouldn't do that because he's going to tell everyone what you
right
just told him.
Yeah, I always think about that whenever anyone shows me like a text that someone else sent them. my immediate thought is like, I need to not share any information with you ever again. Like, you cannot be trusted as a good friend.
Mm-hmm. I once went on a date where they were like,
it's like, that's pretty much the telltale sign.
I once went on a date where they were like, I slept with like they were like naming celebrities they'd slept with. And they were like, oh, they were bad. And like, oh, they were like, they were terrible and bad. And I was just like, mm-hmm, there's no way I'm sleeping with you. Like, I'm going to pay the check and leave because I'm not having you.
Where's the confidence?
Talk trash on me.
You know?
It's right here. It's right here on mic one.
You better be confident wearing that broad fucking city Comedy Central swag around.
I like it.
I had to give mine to Goodwill.
It made me think I want a shirt that says good fucking talk. You know, if Broad City gets one.
Like, I love the shirt, but you can't really wear it out in public, or at least I can't. And then I can't wear it around the house either because I have children. And so then where was I left? Because it was very comfortable.
Yeah, Greg's throwing this back to, well, I think when we first started the podcast, Comedy Central gave us a bunch of like swag they had left over. And Greg and I had matching T-shirts, Broad City T-shirts that said Broad fucking City. And I love to wear mine because people are like, is Anthony Jeselnik repping Broad City? And a show that I liked. I watched a couple episodes. They seem cool.
Broad City is amazing. It's one of the best New York shows, you know, of the last decade or two.
I believe it. I just don't watch a lot of TV. And I definitely don't watch a lot of things on Comedy Central. But I like the shirt a lot, and I enjoy wearing it. I had a good week. My week was kind of, except for Largo, my week was kind of based around The Irishman. I was excited to watch it. I had a friend over Friday night, and we watched it. And I loved it way more than I ever thought I would. And then Saturday, I was supposed to go to like three different Christmas parties I was invited to. Like, just like, I'll stop in, then I'll go to this one, then that one. And it was like slightly raining, and I just canceled on all of them. Like, didn't tell anybody, just didn't go and watched The Irishman again and went to bed at midnight, and it was awesome.
Like, if any of those people, they're probably not listening, but should they take it as a sign of your friendship? Because ultimately, if it was like someone you were pretty close with, you would have gone.
They were all people that I like a lot and would have loved to have seen and caught up with, but I don't go to a lot of parties. So it's like, if I RSVP yes to your party and don't show up, no one's worried about me. Like, they're just like, I'm not a guy who goes out that much unless I'm going to do a show, or which I do a lot. So I have a robust social life. But do I want to Uber to your house in the rain? No, I do not.
7 hours is a lot. You're saying I should watch it, is what you're saying. Is this your recommendation station early?
No, you always say that. No, I would not. I would never recommend like one of the biggest movies that came out this month that everyone's talking about for recommendation station the way that you do. I would never be like, oh, hey, what won the most Emmys? Let me recommend that to people.
That happened one time.
Remember when you recommended The Diary of Anne Frank, something that everyone read in fifth grade?
I mean, I totally, there's no recommendation station I'm prouder of than hooking up old A&F. It's a great piece of literature. I mean, that's what people still don't even get it. Like, if you went back and read it now, you'd be like, holy shit, this is well written and obviously fascinating.
I've never read it. I just feel like it
kind
of like.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm trying to convince some like harder, you know, cynical people that do enjoy reading, and we hear from a lot of them, that this would be worth your time. The classics, Anthony.
I'm more of a Mein Kampf guy than a Diary of Anne Frank person, but I hear good things.
I feel like he probably used that joke in episode 3 or whenever I said Anne Frank.
I would have remembered. I just like a little girl's diary. I don't care what happened. Like, it's not.
Here's the thing. She wasn't a little girl, though. She had, you know, she was a teenager, but she.
That's a little girl.
But she had the writing talent of like a. Yeah, she was living through some shit for sure. But to that heightened it. But she had the writing talent of someone who's going to have a big life in letters. Till it was all taken away.
Yeah, I don't believe you. I think it was a teenage girl, and I bet they punched it up. I bet someone, I bet when the Nazis found it, they were like, let's fix this, and made it way more adult and poetic. So yeah, bailed on parties to watch The Irishman. It was
I'm looking
way
forward
funnier.
To season 6, by the way, when you're like, you know what, Greg? It's like, I finally did read Anne Frank, and you were right. It's like, you've been killing me on the book recommendations this whole time.
I like how your impression of me has gotten more subtle, yet still was so far off. You just kind of lower it an octave. And go with it. But The Irishman was way funnier than I thought it would be. I didn't think it was going to be funny at all. But Pacino was goddamn hilarious in it. hilarious. I loved it, and I think a lot of the criticism is wasted. The stuff about like who's the actress who only had, like, says six words? People are like mad that she only got six words, and it's like that's the part, you know?
Yeah,
she, and
the
she,
daughter.
Yeah,
or, yeah,
yeah, and she played it great. That I loved the whole thing, and enough to watch it twice in two nights. All the way through. People are saying like you got to watch it like a miniseries. No, you do not. Sit down and watch it. I wish I could have seen it in a theater, but I can't wait to watch it again.
I've thought about this. I think it's because in terms of the criticism, just more people are watching it because it's Netflix. Like, I can only imagine how many tens of millions of people are watching this because they don't have to go out to a theater and pay to do it. That you're opening up like a different audience, because I've seen a lot of criticism or a lot of like what the fuck about Marriage Story, the Noah Baumbach movie, and I'm surprised. And then it sort of makes sense because it's being presented as sort of this pop culture moment, which has never once happened for a Noah Baumbach movie. Like, going to a Noah Baumbach movie is like going to your Largo show. It's like, you know what you're getting. You are signing up for some Baumbach. And now that it's on Netflix, people, you hear about it, people are just going to turn it on and they're like, what's with all this Baumbach?
You're screaming.
It annoys me. It annoys me.
I understand exactly what you're saying. I think that's just the price you pay for going into popular culture.
Yeah, it's fine. It's great. More people are seeing it. I'm sure more people will like it. It is on Netflix. Yeah, I recommended it about a month ago and saw it in the theater, but it came out on Netflix on Friday. And a lot of people love it. A lot of people roasting it. Not my favorite Baumbach, but it's in the top six.
I have not seen it yet. Greg, how was your week while I cue something up here?
It was good. No, I feel like I don't have a lot going on in my life during the NFL season.
How's Walker doing?
He's doing okay, my relationship, I mean, I love him so much. But my relationship with my son is like unlike any relationship I've ever had in my life. It's like,
it's good.
It's great. No, it's great. But it's like up and down and emotional. I'm not used to feeling so many emotions. Like, he's been going, I'm hesitant to go too deep into it, but we've been taking him to a therapist lately, and I have noticed that
Walker is Greg's 4-year-old son.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I have noticed
he's had trouble sleeping.
Yeah, we take turns going with him, Emeka and I. I'll go 1 week, she'll go the next. And I do find like when I go in with him, like I end up talking a lot to begin with.
Just talking about Noah Baumbach movies?
No, just like it's like I'm just so happy to have a therapist to talk to that, I'm talking about it. And she's like, okay, yeah, it's been. And then I ask Emeka, it's like, when you talk to her at the beginning, how long does it last? She's like, oh, 5 minutes. And I'm like, oh, I talked for like 25 minutes with her. So maybe that says something about
me. Maybe you need to schedule some extra appointments.
Maybe you need your own therapist. Then maybe you wouldn't cry in your sleep and start screaming. Make Emeka sleep on the couch. Something funny happened to me. Actually, something cool happened. I'll tell the funny thing first, and then we'll talk about Vulture. I get a tweet today from Permane Brothers. Permane Brothers is a famous sandwich shop in Pittsburgh. It's something like the first thing a lot of people think of when they think of Pittsburgh.
It's like the first place you brought me. I think the first night I was in Pittsburgh, certainly one of the first few you brought me. Brought me out there.
It's a delicious sandwich. It's like
the fries are in it, right?
Yeah, French bread. They put the fries and the coleslaw on the sandwich. I always get the steak. It's delicious. They've got all kinds of different ones, but it's a staple in Pittsburgh. And they have a wall like in each Permane Brothers that's like a collage of famous Pittsburgh people. Michael Keaton's up there. Different Steelers, of course, different Pirates, different athletes, but a lot of actors. And I've always wanted to be on the wall. Like, they put the guy from who's Sofia Vergara's husband?
Joe.
Yeah, he was on True Blood. Like, they put him on the wall, and I was like, fuck, like, they're still putting people on. I got to get on there. And at the time, my manager was working for Jimmy Miller, who's from Pittsburgh, and like a big-time producer and guy in Hollywood, called Permane Brothers, the owners, and were like, put Anthony on the wall. And they were like, no. So I get this direct message, this thing, and they're like, hey, we'd love to talk to you. Please DM us. And I write back immediately, and I'm like, how can I be of assistance? And they write back to me, hey, Anthony, we've created a Deck the Halls carol, Permane style, and are reaching out to the most influential people either in the Berg or from the Berg to help us sing it. All you need to do is sing the carol to the tune of Deck the Halls and film yourself on your phone or with your computer. Send it back to us, and we'll edit you together with the rest of the best of the Berg and share the final video on social to help make this holiday season slawsome. That's awesome, but like slaw, because they put coleslaw on the sandwiches. What do you say? And now here's the song. I'm just going to read it.
No, sing it, please.
Listen, there's no way. Tis the season to be hungry. Sla-la-la-la-la, la-la-la-la. This song's sure to bring some cheer. Sla-la-la-la-la, la-la-la-la. So sit on back and grab a beer. Sla-la-la-la-la. See the tasty deals before us. Sla-la-la-la-la.
No, you got to say the whole sla-la-la-la.
Get the app
every time.
And earn rewards. Sla-la-la-la-la, la-la-la-la. Pull up a stool because it's game night. Sla-la-la-la-la. Fries and slaw will get you right. Sla-la-la-la-la. Did you know Primanti caters? Sla-la-la-la-la. Don't forget to tip your waiter. Sla-la-la-la-la, la-la-la-la. In the strip, open 24-7. Sla-la-la-la-la, la-la-la-la. That's the thing. I write back, and they were like, what do you say? And I said, I say I love Primanti Brothers and I love Pittsburgh. But of course, I'm not going to do this. Happy holidays, and thanks for thinking of me. And they write back, thanks for the quick reply, Anthony, and happy holidays to you as well. So I will never be on that wall. It will never happen.
I mean, they should think, I mean, it's for social, you
it's
know.
Social, but like, I'm
maybe,
not.
Maybe tighten it up a little bit. It's Stairway to Heaven length right there.
But that's so that like each, like I would sing like one bar and they go to the next person. But like, I always think of it, like when people ask me to do charity things or like the red nose campaign, you know, we take a picture of yourself wearing a red nose or something. I always say no. Like, I'll give you money if you want, but no, because it, like when I was a kid, they had like a bunch of cartoons on Fox that I would watch every day. And they had like a Christmas one where they sing a Christmas carol and it's different characters, like the Tiny Toons, the Animaniacs are singing. And at some point it goes to Batman. And Batman is like, "Tis the season." And it was so ridiculous that I was like, "I'm like Batman, ruining the song for everyone. Leave me out of it." That reminds me too. Talking about Red Nose, you know what fact I found out? And maybe I've said this in the podcast before. You know when you go to like Walgreens or like a grocery store,
it's like a dollar for the nose or
yeah.
something.
Yeah, have I talked about this
no.
before? When they say like, "Do you want to donate a dollar to the March of Dimes or whatever charity it is they're doing?" They've already donated the money. They're asking you to pay them back.
Really?
Yes. And it makes perfect sense. Like, of course, Walgreens isn't going to be like, hey, like, we'll just give whatever people give. They give like $500,000 and then they ask people, do you want to donate a dollar? And you're just paying back Walgreens.
That's some shady shit.
Because yeah.
I wonder if, I mean, who's keeping track that they're not taking extra?
I wonder if they went over. I wonder, but I think they give so much that like a dollar a person is not going to do a thing. But like you're just giving Walgreens a dollar. You are not, and like Walgreens should be giving money. So like now that I heard that, I'm like, I can't wait for the next time someone's like, "Would you like to donate?" And I'm going to like turn around in line and be like, "No one do this. No one donate." They've already
have
done
you
it.
Have you been tracking the Primanti Brothers campaign? Like, is it blowing up?
I mean, they just did it to me today. I assume it would come
today.
Out like,
it was just today.
And they'd have to put it together, you know, and be a whole big thing. So it won't be out for a while.
Maybe our listeners can send in like their versions. They got all the lyrics already.
Yeah, tweet it to Anthony and Greg.
Not to us. Maybe just send it straight to Primanti Brothers.
I think just send it right to Junior Vice President, JRVP Junior Vice President, excuse me, at Gmail. But now let's get to the real big deal this year. Vulture.com. A publication that I think wrote the best review of all the reviews of Fire and the Maternity Ward, my last special. They've been good to me. They talk about me a lot, and they named their top 10 comedy specials of the year, and I came in number 2. It's fun. It was like I hadn't had that feeling in a while because I've been a special come out in a while where like the year end lists come out and it starts at number 10 and you're scrolling down, so you're like, okay, I'm not number 10. I'm not number 9, and you're like hoping that you're going to be number 1, and then you keep going down, and it gets better. You get like you feel better and better. And I was number 2 to Lil Rel's last special, which you talked about. You were like, "Oh, that she made it sound."
The review of it, I don't watch a ton of specials. I was just like, it sounded so interesting and good that she sold it. I want to watch it.
It's fantastic. And it has a really, I forget the name of the special. I think Live in Crenshaw.
Yeah.
Live in Crenshaw. He does it in a high school gymnasium with these huge windows, almost like a church type windows without the, like church windows without the stained glass. And it's like the middle, it looks like daytime, like sun is pouring through. And he comes on stage and he's like, he's sweating. Like people are fanning themselves. And I'm like, why would they do this? But by the end of the special, it's nighttime. So like you see, and it's one long show. So you see it change. It's almost, it reminded me of watching Boyhood.
Yeah.
And like in a way that like I'm watching Boyhood and I'm like, with the movie Boyhood. And I'm like, would this be different if they used just different actors? Like hadn't waited 18 years to make this movie. And then by the end of it, you're like, oh, actually it is powerful. Like it was cool. And I don't want to – Lil Rel is an amazing comedian. The special was directed by Gerard Carmichael, who's a friend of mine, Gerard Carmichael. And but a lot of the review was talking about how great the direction was. Mm. That if I ever shoot a special where the review talks about how great the direction was, I'll be fucking furious. Like if someone's like, I've got this great idea, I'd be like, no. I've already written down all the great ideas and I'm going to tell them to you.
But you say he's a great comedian, has been for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the best, just absolutely hilarious through and through.
That's badass.
He was in the movie Get Out. He was the TSA agent in Get Out.
Oh.
He's in a bunch of stuff. But he's like his other – I think he did a special on Comedy Central once, maybe HBO or maybe even Netflix.
Number
but
two, though.
This
that
HBO
is,
special.
That
is
big.
Yeah, but she also said that she's like, I'm kind of just arbitrarily giving these numbers out except for number one, which I thought was the best special of the year, even though it came out like 2 weeks ago. Journalism, but I love the woman who does it, and it is it's great just to be on the list. You know what I mean? It's nice to be higher up. I've definitely been number one a couple of times. I think Shakespeare was the number one album 1 year on a couple of publications. Thoughts and Prayers was number one on a few, but it was funny to see how people reacted to being on the list, like on social media. Like Bill Burr didn't mention it. Bill Burr was like number seven or whatever. Like he didn't see it. Mike Birbiglia was like, it's an honor to be included with, and like named all the people and like a clap emoji. And I was just like, yeah, I was like, I'm pissed. I'm not number one. That was like my thing. And then Nikki Glaser was like, not going to lie, I really needed this today. And I was like, fuck Nikki, get it together. But it's cool to be on that list. It's the first list that's come out of specials. Hopefully more come out and I'm higher up than just number two. And again, it's just nice to be on the list. Hopefully more people watch the special. There were a lot of great specials this year, and I'm happy to be a part of it. But then, to top it, Greg, break down what happened today.
The Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project,
JRVP,
Junior Vice President,
was mentioned on Vulture's Year in Comedy podcast, and to highlight all their favorite podcasts.
How many were there that they highlight?
I eyeballed it. There was no list. They basically just gave out a bunch of superlatives, like best homecoming to the podcast world, best political comedy, stuff like that. We were the first category, so I'd like to
best
think...
Best political comedy?
No, I'd like to think that means we're the best. And it was the most triumphant return, which went to us and something called the Thirst Aid Kit. But we are on the list. It was written by... a man named Pablo Goldstein.
Not a real name?
That's definitely a real name. I mean, what a great name, Pablo Goldstein. The kind of name I wanted my kid to have. Just like, there's no ambiguity. It's like, you got the Pablo, you got the Goldstein. Like, you figure it out.
If you named your kid,
you know what I mean?
Pablo Rosenthal, people would be so, like, they would just be confused wherever you went.
He would have been K. Rosenthal if Emeka's friend hadn't named her son Kay somewhat recently, K-E-I. That's his middle name, which is a very common name in Japan.
Yeah, but Pablo's not.
Right. But wouldn't Kay Rosenthal just kind of be cool?
It would be cool.
I thought it would have been good.
But Pablo Rosenthal, like Pablo Goldstein sounds
Pablo
like
anything.
It's the Ron Mexico of journalists. It's like it's a fake name. It's a fake name that you use when you're getting an STD test. But it was great. Greg, please read the article. I want to point something out. Yeah, it's
pretty long.
Read it.
All right. In the last 15 minutes of Anthony Jeselnik's 2015 special Thoughts and Prayers, the master of hilariously repugnant one-liners dropped his mask. This is going to take a while to speak at length about Comedy Central forcing him to delete a joke about the Boston Marathon bombing. As a younger comic, Jeselnik might have felt that being earnest, honest, and vulnerable would cheapen his onstage persona. But since that closer, Jeselnik has continued to gradually open up in interviews, like Vulture's Good One, his talk show Good Talk, and his podcast, The Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project.
Jeremy B.
Junior Vice President. Jesus.
It's a reboot of 2015-2016's The Rosenthal and Jeselnik Vanity Project.
RGVP.
An NFL-themed podcast hosted by Jeselnik and NFL.com writer Greg Rosenthal that served as a vessel for Jeselnik to get his longtime best friend fired. Hey, I'm still making that money over at the NFL. For the new version, which premiered in late 2018, the NFL conceit was swiftly dropped after one episode, allowing Jeselnik to bounce his rants off of Rosenthal and producer Erica Tamposi without regard for a football connection. Sometimes it's angry, as it is whenever Jeselnik speaks about Comedy Central, the producers of his podcast and TV show. Sometimes it's tender, like the episode devoted to the late Brody Stevens. But it's always wildly funny. He's not skipping opportunities to make fun of screenwriter getting hot diarrhea dumped on her, or a teacher who dressed in blackface to impersonate Commons Microsoft commercial. But you'll also find segments from the once aspiring novelist devoted to the latest Otessa Moshfegh novel. Jeselnik's given you a slight peek behind the mask, but the devilish grin behind it remains.
What I love about it is that it barely mentions either one of you. That it sounds like a podcast that you may as well set up the mics and walk out of the room, Greg.
Yeah, that means, you know, I'm doing a good job. I'm setting it up and you're knocking it down.
Just funny they would write about us and not talk more about you or about our relationship. It's literally just like me.
I thought Erica would be happy that she got mentioned at all. So I think that's a win for her.
That was great, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
where did the broadcast come in?
I mean, where in what? I bet if we
number one.
I bet if we look down the entire rest of this list, there is not one other producer mentioned by name. I would bet my life savings on it.
Read it all right now.
So that's a win. But yeah, he's clearly, you know, it's Vulture. It's, you know, it's a pop culture con.
They're cool. They're
I'm not expecting them to be big around the NFL fans. My other podcast.
I didn't know about that.
You know,
maybe next year. Maybe Pablo Goldstein will step it up and listen to 4 hours of Around the NFL.
Shout out to iTunes, who once gave Around the NFL podcast best new podcast of 2013 in those awards.
Oh, wow.
No awards since.
You're still leaning on that one?
That's why I brought it up. So I got that one. Got a Stitcher award.
Anything.
Got a big audience.
I don't know what you're talking about now. Anything else happened this week besides? Is this the highlight?
No, that was exciting. I just found out this morning. I mean, a coworker actually let me know. I don't even know if I would have found out.
Are you excited?
He said he saw it and he was like, "Congrats, man!"
Are you excited about? I wouldn't have known if you hadn't told me. Like, it didn't pop up in my Google alerts or anything. Are you worried at all about Patriots' new Spygate?
No, I mean, it is annoying. It's just annoying.
I feel honestly, if they had never mentioned this, what happened, the Patriots had people at a Browns-Bengals game, and they were taping the Bengals sideline, and the Bengals were notified, and you know, the Patriots were saying, "Oh, we didn't know. This is just the production thing." But that's what they were told to say last time. So I think, honestly, you can't beat the Bengals unless you cheat in this league. And I think the Patriots are going down. You know, they're gonna get some fines.
It's annoying because, you know, we host this podcast and, you know, it's like, I don't like being put in the position, and it's happened a lot with the Patriots especially, where I'm expected to defend them as if this is some sort of religion or political party where I need to be saying talking points from the Patriots side. I'm over it. Stop putting yourself in stupid positions that we have to talk about, Patriots. Get your act together.
For a second, I thought you were talking to me. I was like, I put you in this position, a position to win, a position of victory.
No, I'm talking about this nonsense where it's like, I don't know. Sports is so tribal. It annoys me about the most annoying parts of Twitter in terms of politics and anything. It's I didn't sign up for this just because we were born in Massachusetts. You're supposed to have a certain take on these things.
You've dedicated your life to talking about the NFL. Row your boat. Erica, how was your week?
It was good. Came down with this little head cold, but it was good. Went down to Orlando for a family sort of early Christmas thing with some family, and it was cool.
Cool. When you said Orlando, I was like, Jesus Christ, why would you do that? I thought you were saying like on a vacation, but a family thing, I get it.
No.
Orlando is for family and nothing else.
Exactly.
And now it's time for Did We Get Any Notes?
Don't get me started. I'm the life of the party.
I would believe that's a real song. Thank you, Erica. That was a good deep dig. No notes this week. Jeremy is still on paternity leave. But the network hasn't given us notes either. I have a meeting with the network next week to talk about Good Talk. We'll see how that goes. We'll see how the first meeting in a Kent Altman-less Comedy Central goes for everybody. But I'm sure everyone's a little bit nervous.
I feel like it's been a little quiet on the Good Talk front. I thought there was going to be an announcement or something.
We're still waiting on that press release. You know, the holidays and everything, who knows? But, you know, hopefully we can announce it soon. No notes, but the studio is clean. I've been complaining about the studio, and I said there were... Oh, my God. No. No. They just moved it. there was an object...
Oh, you just saw it?
There was an object in here that I was like, if that object is still here, then I'll know they didn't take my note and do it. And we were like, oh, cool, it's gone. They moved it from one corner to another. So maybe they took half the note. Maybe Jeremy came in, like brought his baby in here and cleaned up a little bit. But I think we can still do better. I think we can still run a more professional studio, even though there are three podcasts in here. And we're the only one that got named on Vulture's Best Of for some reason.
Interesting.
Your Two Dads and Roast Battle did not make the cut.
Wait, I didn't check. Let me check the honorable mentions. There was like a pretty long list.
There's no way.
And your Two Dads.
See.
I'm going to move on while you're doing that. Erica, now it's time for...
Ad copy.
The Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project, JRVP.
Junior Vice President.
Is brought to you in part by ZipRecruiter. Hiring can be a slow process, all right? When you're in like my position, you know, you're the CEO of your own company. Sometimes you got to hire people and it's tough, you know? So sometimes if I need to hire someone, I would go to ZipRecruiter. Because ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply for your job. So you get only the qualified candidates and you get them fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. Dylan did that. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. I left out some Dylan pre-story up top.
You can imagine. The whole Dylan bit would probably have made sense if you had added, you know, the background.
Yeah.
Cafe Alturas. Everyone knows that. This is CEO like, Dylan Miskowitz.
This ad is like Pulp Fiction, where you go back and forth. It's like, wait, didn't that guy die? Why is he back again? It's like, no. I'll go back
it's like
to
the
Dylan.
You just introduced the character halfway into the movie. People have no idea who Dylan is.
Listen, everyone knows who Dylan Miskowitz is. He's a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. He was having trouble finding applicants. I would have gone back to it. Results like that, it's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/vanity. That's ZipRecruiter.com/VANITY. ZipRecruiter.com/vanity. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
And that was...
Ad copy.
Again, another just a stellar ad read. Like, people just must be so excited when we get to ads. And now it's time for something even more exciting than ad copy. It's time for Erica's Corner. The only song I let break the 5-second rule. Was that the same song you played the first time?
No.
Or different, completely different song?
A little MC Light.
Erica Tamposi is our producer. She's kind of in the background, you know what I mean? But just as important as Greg. not me. You know, I'm on top of the pyramid. But you need two people on their hands and knees for me to get on top of to be a pyramid. So we need three people. We need two people plus me. It could be anybody, but it works.
I think the takeaway here was you need people on their hands and knees for you to get on top of. That was really what I took away.
I don't need them. I just have them wherever I go. I can just jump on top of people because they're on their hands and knees trying to please me. Erica Tamposi is our producer, produces a lot of different things, wears a lot of hats, has a lot of talents. So we like to, because we love her so much, we like to give her a couple minutes of the podcast for herself that she can do whatever she wants. So Erica, shine on and control your corner. Own it.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to read a fan email today. Paul B. says, some of my favorite podcast moments are when you bring up wild experiences from your lives. What is each of you, all three of you in parentheses, nearest death experience? Drinking can be involved, but alcohol poisoning doesn't count. Thanks for brightening my week. Paul.
I'll go first because I think I'm the only one who's given this any thought. I was in high school. I would have been, I believe, a junior in high school, maybe the summer in between junior and senior year, maybe like a weekend, where I had a friend whose parents were like building a cabin out in the woods, like an hour, like a couple hours outside of Pittsburgh. And I was working a job and I asked if I could have the weekend off to go with my friends. And they were like, no. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go just for the day and then come back. So they're like, okay, that's fine. And there was no way I was going to make it back. Like my friends were driving the car. And it was a time in high school. It's like there's a time after you get your driver's license to like when you kind of become a little more of an adult that you do stupid things with your car that are fun. And like since you don't like get into huge accidents, you think it's like, okay. Where I had friends who really liked to go off jumps in their car.
I mean, not everyone does this, but yeah.
Everyone does it. And we would like there would be a certain hill that like you'd hit the bottom if you went fast enough and your car would go flying up in the air. And we loved it. And we get to we're on these old dirt roads. And my friend's like, oh, there's a great jump. We're flying. It's the middle of the day. We're flying down this dirt road. And there's just like a fucking, like to the left, to the right is like a mountain, like to the immediate right. And to the left is like a bottomless pit. And we hit this jump. We're flying. We're doing like 60 on this dirt road.
You're driving.
No, I'm in the back seat, not wearing a seatbelt.
Oh my God.
Not even paying attention. I'm eating an ice cream sandwich. I'm just like sitting. We'd gone to the gas station. I'm eating an ice cream sandwich. And then we hit this jump. And when we land, the car completely loses control. We almost go off the cliff. The car skids and hits like a rock that just happened to be there. And then we turn and go directly straight into the mountain. Like head-on collision into the mountain. Everyone's okay. The car is totaled, I believe. We're fine. I'm fine, even though I wasn't wearing a seatbelt. The car is like filled with like vines and leaves for some reason. We like get out. I thought for sure we were dead. We get out and had to like walk down this dirt road for hours until we found a house that would like let us in. People living in the middle of like nowhere aren't like, hey, come in and use the phone.
Damn.
Finally found someone and then tried to say a deer ran in front of us. And like no one believed us. We're just like, you idiots. We're off-roading in a Hyundai. A Hyundai. Hyundai? Not yeah. The Honda, but the Hyundai?
Hyundai.
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 Your job. You've got...
Hyundai.
You've got
it's Korean. But hey, it's all the same to you, huh?
In a Korean car. Honda and Hyundai are the same to me. But yeah, totaled my friend's Hyundai.
Hyundai.
And I got fired from the job because I had to call and be like...
Wow.
We don't have... Like, we just got in a car accident. I can't get back.
Were you like legit for a second? How afraid were you?
It was like being on a roller. I was so surprising, and you're weightless for like a couple seconds that I was just like, there was no time to even panic. You were just like, oh my God. And then as soon as we crashed, I started laughing hysterically. And my two friends were just like still like terrified. I just could not stop laughing. And then we got out and walked. But I think I was like too in shock to be afraid, but it's like the closest I've come to just like a stupid, stupid death.
I've never had a near-death experience, so I'll just use this this time to point out two big car crashes at least. One in Springfield, Massachusetts, during a snowstorm, this won't surprise you, wasn't totally, you know, paying attention to like what was going on, you know, in terms of like our exit was coming up, and then saw it, and despite being in the snowstorm, tried to do like a crossing, you know, three lanes maneuver to get off. Didn't quite do it in time because of the snow, you know, that all messed me up, and just went like car, you know, face first into a gigantic snowbank. That was a lot of fun.
Were you like any injuries or at
all? We were fine. It was just kind of a shock to the system because I was trying to get there, but the car just started sliding a little bit, and then bam, right into the snowbank. And then the other worst accident I was in was right near you. I believe you picked me up. I was crossing Santa Monica and La Brea, right near our old apartment. We can leave that address since we lived there 20 plus years.
Sierra Bonita.
Yeah, a long time ago. And I was legal going through just a regular green light, and some huge van went left and just smashed into me. And I just got this new car. It's the first time I got a new car and the last time for another 15 years after that. And got, totaled the car, airbag went off. My back was all like effed up, but I still had to go to work later that day at Most Outrageous Game Show Moments 4. Because Most Outrageous Game Show Moments 2 and 3 left the people wanting more. They brought back Chuck Woolery, and we brought it.
Who was your first phone call after that car accident?
It was you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you were like 3 blocks away. I was like, can you come over here? I don't really remember anything. I don't remember too much about it other than I got to work, and then my back started killing me, and I was like, God damn it, I should have fucking gone to a hospital or some nonsense, because it was a guy who was illegal, was driving the car, but he was driving it for like a movie studio, and they came quickly and were just like trying to settle the whole situation, and me not go after them. In hindsight, I should have.
You should have sued them all.
What did you do when you came and got me? I don't really remember this at all.
I don't know if I drove you home, because it was like you could have walked home.
Right.
But I must have taken you somewhere. You had to do something.
Maybe I had you take me to work.
That's possible. My boss was like, my roommate just got in a car accident. Can I go get him? And she was like, yeah, go ahead.
But it was like I was going 35, 40 miles an hour. So it was a shock to the system. I got smashed.
This is a great ad for cars and seatbelts.
Yeah.
Erica, how about you?
Well, when I read this, I thought of this story that happened in high school. And it wasn't necessarily like a near death, like I got into an accident. But it's probably like the scariest thing that's ever happened to me. I was babysitting for my cousins, and they live in the middle of a farm. We have like this big family farm, so there's only one road through there. And it was the night that the When a Stranger Calls movie came out, and so all of my friends were prank phone calling my cell phone, like, have you checked the children? So I was like, okay, whatever, shut off my cell phone. So then we get a phone call to the house phone, and my like little baby cousin was like 4 or 5, answers the phone, and all I hear is, no, they're not home. No, here's Erica. And I'm like 16, 17 at this point. And I answer the phone, and it was a guy, and it's like 11 at night. And he's like, the first thing he says when I answer the phone is, how old are you? And I was like, I'm 21. I like lied because I thought that would make me seem more whatever. And then just click, they hung up. So I was like, okay, that's weird. But none of my friends had this phone number. I was in a different town. I was in the field, like whatever. So I ended up calling my aunt and uncle being like, hey, we got like this weird kind of phone call. I'm just kind of freaked out, like just letting you know. And they're like, okay, cool. And then my aunt ended up coming home from the party that they were at. She's like, something just didn't sit well with me with that. So like your uncle stayed at the party. I'm just going to take you home because I wasn't even driving. So they drove me home to my mom's house. My dad and brothers were out of town at our lake house skiing, and my mom had broken her ankle. So she was upstairs on crutches, like couldn't really go anywhere. So I go upstairs. She's like, okay, you made it, like whatever, it's not a big deal. And then she's like, did you shut off all the lights downstairs? And I was like, oh no. And she's like, just go do it, you're fine, whatever. So I go back downstairs, and as I'm shutting off the lights, there's a doorbell. My doorbell rings, and I think I must have been like 15. I was like a freshman in high school, so I was really young. And I grab a baseball bat in my stupid mind, like, that's going to do anything. And I open the door, and it's my aunt, and she has the two kids, like, in their PJs. She said that she was driving back home, and there was a guy walking on the cornfield with a flashlight, but the flashlight was off. So he was walking on the one road near the only house in the field with a flashlight, no dog, no leash. And she said she like continued driving, and there was like no parked cars or anything like that. And this guy, so we called the cops, like my mom hobbled down on crutches. They never found the guy. They searched the cornfield. They searched my cousin's house. They searched everywhere, and they never found him. And I was like 15 at the time. So that was probably the scariest moment of my life.
This sounds like a story about you letting fear get in the way of true love.
Yeah, you think that was someone pursuing?
Yeah, I think, who knows? You never know.
Right.
He could have been there to kill you and then fallen in love.
Right.
If he got over the lying that you did to him.
Yeah, I did say I was 21.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's upsetting. That's upsetting.
I'm just impressed your default mode was lying just like that.
I don't
Not
know.
Surprised, but impressed.
If someone asks how old you are, you always lie. You always, if you're like a teenager, you always level up.
Well, I just
up.
Didn't want to be like, yeah, I'm 14 and home alone. Like, come. I was like, oh, I'm 21.
And
like,
no one wants to mess with the 21-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that would have done anything.
Yeah, I get it. So, yeah, so that's one near-death experience, two car accidents, and Erica's story. And that was Erica's Corner. Shine on, you crazy diamond. Best at what we do, we break it flaws, and we take awards. Wars lead us to the stars, scars, we erase the bars. Ooh. Did they update the Comedy Central library?
Or you I just, had to you do just some dug, real just, digging.
This is great. Greg, you know what? Let's get to headlines.
It's time. And it's time to check a part of the world that I love. It's one of my favorite times of year. The kids all across the country are getting excited, getting their gear out.
You don't mean...
No, it's not Christmas. It's Pro Bowl season. It's Anthony Jeselnik's favorite time of year. It's Pro Bowl.
Pro Bowl.
Headed to Orlando.
Who cares about the sixth seed? Who cares about the one seed? I don't care about the playoffs or the Super Bowl. I care about one thing and one thing only. The reason we do this podcast, Pro Bowl and Pro Bowl news. Greg, what's the news?
Have you heard of a phenomenon at the Pro Bowl? You must, because you're such a Pro Bowl head. That they announce four legends captains at every Pro Bowl.
Yeah. Lately. The last couple of years they've done that.
And one of the captains this year is Michael Vick. And a woman started a petition on change.org.
Not change.org.
I mean, that's where you go to get things done. You're like, I'm sick of just talking, complaining on Twitter. Let's go for some real change. Let's go to change.org. And she started a petition to take Michael Vick out of his position as the Legends captain. And you know, it stood out for me for a few reasons. You know, the dog fighting, all that. People still upset about that. But mostly, it's just a reminder. It's Pro Bowl season.
Yeah, I mean, that's all it is for me. Is Pro Bowl season. Like, if this was like, if he just got out of prison and they named him captain, I would get it. Like, you know, but he went to prison. He did the things he needed to do to get back into the league. You know, ended his career with the Steelers. They liked him when he was around. I just think this is so funny because, like, does this woman, like, every year is she starting a petition about the Pro Bowl? Is she mad about something? Was she mad when they took it out of Hawaii? Like, no one cares about the Pro Bowl. They could leave Aaron Hernandez's corpse at midfield, and no one would notice.
He's starting at tight end. They have a hard time, like, filling the spots. No one wants to go play, especially now that it's in Orlando. I do like as if this woman wants to, you know, really call attention and really like mess things up for the NFL, it's definitely changing the Legends captain status at the Pro Bowl. Like, there is no greater honor that a player can achieve than being named Legends captain at the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, there are people right now playing in the league who are like on camera domestic abusers, and she's mad about Michael Vick, a retired guy. Who, yeah, he killed a couple dogs, but he owned them. It wasn't like they were just someone else's dogs, which is a crime. But you know,
he like hung them and like electrocuted them. It wasn't just dog fighting. I mean,
the big one was
sick
picking
fuck.
It up over his head and slamming it down. Yeah, it's bad. Everything he did is bad. I was goofing around, Erica, like I do sometimes. But I think Michael Vick has paid his debt to society. I think he's probably moved on to cockfighting, like a lot of people do. after their dogfighting careers are over, and I think that I would not sign this petition.
No,
are people at the NFL Network worried about it?
This was the first I had heard of it was through our show. It doesn't feel like it's catching. I mean, although half a million people have signed it now, and
still,
when the article was written,
a million moms
like
there's
a day ago,
moms.
it was half that, and it's already doubled since I went and checked it. So people are definitely holding this against him. I mean, I would think they would be more upset that he's on national television every week. you know, as an analyst.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a little more visibility than being the Legends captain and like, you know, flipping a coin at the skills competition in Orlando.
Yeah. It's a real dumb thing this woman is doing. It's one of those 1 million moms type bullshit things that happens sometimes. I say go Michael. Go Michael Vick. You don't bring your brother. I heard good things about him.
Marcus, I've looked at dog fighting differently since, differently.
What the fuck?
Relax, calm down.
In some cultures, it's a thing. Like, listen, bullfighting is fucked up here, but in Mexico and Spain, they do it. You can't judge people. Cockfighting is legal in Mexico. In some cultures, you know, see nothing wrong with it. That who are we to judge?
I'm forgetting. The book I recommended just a month ago is basically centered around dogfighting and the build-up to Hurricane Katrina. And it's just, I don't know, it's different.
What, it makes it sound cool?
No, it doesn't make it sound cool. It's just an honest reflection of what is happening in their culture and what the dogs mean to them and everything like that. It doesn't make it any better. It just gives you context to people who have no idea what that world is like.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in The Wire, there was like a dog fighting subplot. I just think that dogs want to fight. You know, let them. Like, why do we have to domesticate everything to the point that they can't fight? I think all dogs should fight. And then whoever wins gets to be like a real dog, gets to be like a pet dog.
Salvage the Bones. The National Book Award winner of 2011, which is a dog loving book.
The songs are getting worse, and now it's time for
Ad Copy
Part 2. This one's brought to you by Policy Genius, and as the only homeowner of the group of Jessel Nick and Rosenthal Vanity Project. Chair VP.
Junior Vice President.
People, I'm going to read this one. If you're a homeowner, you know how tough it is to find the right home insurance coverage. I know I do. Even if your rates have crept up over the years, the idea of replacing your policy can seem exhausting. I literally pay people to do this for me. They get 5% of everything I earn so they can pay my bills and debt my insurance. The insurance experts at Policy Genius don't think that getting the best home insurance should be complicated. That's why they reimagined the entire process. Start by answering a few quick questions so the team can get to know you and your property. Then Policy Genius will help you compare your policy against more than 10 insurance companies to make sure you're getting the best home insurance coverage at the best possible price. There's a better rate out there. They'll do all the heavy lifting to get you switched. They don't need you to come to them. They're going to have the best rate, but if they don't, they'll hook you up. And if you're already paying your best rate, Policy Genius team will reshop your policy for you every year to make sure it stays that way. Bundling home and auto, like a lot of us do. Erica, once you get a car and a house, you'll love to do that. Policy Genius has saved their customers an average of $690 per year on home and auto insurance. Whether you need home insurance for a new place or just want to reshop your current policy, head to policygenius.com today. You can get started on your smartphone right now. Policy Genius, the easy way to compare and buy home insurance. And you know what? There is no vanity there. You can't enter a code. It's you already get the discount. We don't even want credit. We just want to tell you about Policy Genius. And that was
Ad Copy. Our next story is from your world, the comedy world, Anthony, where Pete Davidson has been in the news recently for reportedly making fans sign a non-disclosure agreement before attending his comedy shows. According to some of the fans, it threatens attendees with a $1 million fine if they do not abide by the agreement.
See, this is what, like, I don't understand this new thing of, like, comics having to operate under complete secrecy. Like, I was on the road with Chris Rock, and he had that thing where, like, that Dave Chappelle does where you put your phone in a bag, and then they seal the bag, and as soon as you leave, they unseal it. But it just, like, it made his show better, I think, because people aren't on their phones. They don't check them. They can't, like, do anything, so they have to be in the moment. But it takes, like, 2 hours to get everybody in because no one understands this is coming. So I'm not a fan of it. I wouldn't use it myself. I understand why some people do. The NDA thing, I don't get at all because, like, they'll say NDA and you can't take notes. You can't use your phone. But, like, is it if people can't remember the show they just saw and then tell you about it afterwards? And an NDA, like, people online are anonymous. If someone wanted to be like, hey, Pete talks about smoking weed a whole bunch in his new hour, is he going to sue them? Like, I think it's like a hollow thing. He had like a meltdown at a college. he was doing a college and they didn't like some of his jokes and you started yelling at them, which is always a mistake. I've had some jokes not go over well. You got to laugh and get them back on your side. He just lost his mind. But
your roast battle comrade sat next to him on an episode of Roast Battle.
I met Pete in New York. We auditioned for SNL at the exact same time. One of us got it. One of us didn't. I'll let you figure out who it was. I do like Pete. And I know he's enjoying the ladies right now and doing a lot of stand-up. But this whole like NDA thing, this whole like no phones, no notes, it's crazy. The people like Louis C.K. is like, no phones and you can't take notes.
Well,
who takes notes during a comedy show? and you can just walk out and be like, here's what he said.
Well, it's the thing I found funniest about it was, you know, the Washington Post got some legal experts and just said the entire concept of it is a joke. It doesn't matter if you sign it. You can't sue. You're not going to get $1 million out of someone. According to the agreement that he put out there, you could have no opinion. It was saying basically you could not even say, I enjoyed the show. You weren't allowed to say that. You weren't even allowed to say, like, the show was funny. I don't even know if you were allowed to say, like, you were there. And these legal experts are just saying, like, in a court of law, like, this would not stand at all. You're allowed to say things that you were at a place and that you enjoyed it. Like, they can't make it. Like, it doesn't matter if you sign it or not. It would not be binding. This guy is crazy.
I agree with that completely, even though I didn't know that. But his lawyers must hate him so much for him to be like, hey, write up an NDA for everyone who comes to my show and print up a bunch of copies and have them sent over to the venue. It's
just unenforceable. It's like, what if like 10 kids all tweeted at the same time how much the show sucked? He's gonna get $10 million out of those kids.
He's gonna get rich. He's gonna get rich. I know. Whenever I have to call my lawyer and be like, "Hey, take down this YouTube video of someone who took it during my show," I'm sure they're a little bit annoyed. They have to do it. It's not what they're there for.
He's one of the most unique Saturday Night Live cast members in history. I can't remember anyone quite like it while I've been watching it, where it's like he's sort of part of the pop culture paparazzi stories and Page Six and all that. I mean, I guess that has happened before I was like of age, and that's sort of integrated into the show. It's almost like, I don't know, like a little sad. We when I saw him on that night, I've never seen anyone smoke more while he was working than Pete Davidson. He was great and good.
It may have been a tobacco vape.
Might have been
marijuana. We don't know. May have been non-alcoholic beer. May have been real beer. I don't know. But I'm a fan of Pete. I hope he's doing all right. And I hope he stops with this NDA shit because it is ridiculous. With the building, with the office in the field. See my future from the one barrel. That sounds like someone snuck into the studio and then like had a cool beat and just like laid it down. That guy is a janitor who walked in and made his dream come true.
Yeah, you know he's not used to having it when he's rapping about having more leg room.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I'm in economy plus.
Greg, this next story is my favorite story of the week. Please break it down.
Really? The last one is my favorite, but this one's close because it's about the Pensacola attack, which a lot of our listeners may have heard, where a domestic terrorist killed three people at a naval air station in Pensacola. And the reporting that has come out since the killings revealed that he was a Saudi trainee at the station who was, among other things, incredibly upset and had filed a complaint that a lieutenant had kept referring to him as Porn Stash.
Yep.
That was his nickname in the class in front of 10 other aviation students, and he wrote a complaint saying he was infuriated and did not understand why they were calling him that in front of his other students, Mr. Porn Stash.
Yeah, this is a naval base?
It was at the Pensacola Naval Air Station where our friend Connor Grace, I believe, has previously worked.
Probably. Shout out to Connor. I like this because, you know, America is about two things. That's about pornography and training Saudi pilots to fly. We love that shit. You know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, maybe. You know, We'll take that chance. This guy got called Porn Stash, lost his shit, and then killed three people.
We don't know that's why he killed three people. It was much later that was, you know, something.
That was his thing. That was the thing that triggered it. And he thought, I got two options. I can shave my mustache, which if you see a picture of this guy, it's a porn stash. Like you would, if someone said, hey, what's up, porn stash? You would not be insulted or surprised or have to ask a follow-up question. You would get it. He thought, I can either shave this porn stash, I can trim it, or I can shoot a bunch of people. I can shoot as many people as I can. Is he still alive? Did they catch him? Or is he dead?
I think he's alive.
Doesn't matter. When you're Saudi, you live forever. He's either living on Earth or he's living up in heaven with 72 of the hottest virgins you can imagine. I believe that's how it works. I just thought that was funny that someone said porn stash and he went and got a gun.
You have got pretty nice facial hair, but if you tried to refigure it a little bit and someone called you porn stash, like how many people would you kill?
Honestly, if I just shaved that, I just had the mustache, which I do not think I would look good doing, and someone was like, what's up, porn stash? I'd be like, oh, it looks good. Sweet. You know what I mean? That's why you do it. There's no one who has a mustache who isn't obsessed with porn and is grows the mustache just in case bait bus pulls up and pulls him in the van.
Do you, like, is there anything anyone could call you or say to you that would result in
me killing three people in a shooting spree? I've had some telemarketers that have been pretty annoying. When they call me, I want to. I don't have a gun. I don't think about shooting people. And there's nothing that you could. If you insult me, I just insult you back in a much worse way than an insult from me, I think, is worse than a gun. I've insulted people who were like, I wish I was dead right now. I wish I was shot and died rather than have this going through my head forever. It makes me want to join the Navy and pick on the Saudis that we're inexplicably training to fly in our country.
Hot take.
When I read that, I just couldn't believe it. I don't know if you heard about a little something called 9/11, but the Saudis were knee deep in that one. So hey, let's get some more over here. And now it's time for
ad copy.
Painting with a broad brush, Anthony. How dare you? I am so excited to
listen, before you do this, the Saudis were so involved with 9/11, we had to invade the country next door and look for weapons. All right.
Hard pivot away is
I'm
the
just saying,
thoughtful luggage for modern travel. What are you saying?
I'm saying that when I think about traveling, I think about, you know, flying, and then I think about the people we lost that day.
I think we should just start this cleaner and go back to another version of
ad copy.
Away. What a great company Away
is. United 93.
You got to use some Away. You know, whatever.
And now, Erica, it's time for
ad copy.
You got to use some Away, whatever flight number you're on. It's the thoughtful luggage for modern travel. We use Away at the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project.
JRVP. We each have one, and we love them.
We love them because we live in an age of access. Anyone can go everywhere, and that's what makes Away suitcases the best. You can get the most out of your suitcase wherever you go, make the most out of your trip with the thoughtfully made suitcase, the carry-on. It's lightweight. It's durable.
It takes a beating. You can check it, and it's going to come
right,
out.
Right, but it's big, and it's lightweight. It's got a 100-day trial that lets you try any Away product on the road. A limited lifetime warranty means they will fix or replace your bag if it ever gets damaged, but it won't. A built-in compression pad helps you pack in more. It's got a bunch of unique personalization offerings, including hand painting. We just went for it with a regular kind of charcoal black. Looks classic.
I went navy blue. Greg went black. Erica went navy blue.
Four 360-degree spinner wheels guarantee a smooth ride. TSA-approved combination locks are crucial for keeping your belongings safe. It also has an optional ejectable battery to keep your phone charged and a removable laundry bag to separate dirty clothes from clean clothes. These are the type of things that I find, like, like Japanese bags has some of these little things. Now we're catching up. We're catching up when we got the away bag. There's also the bigger carry-on. It's our carry-on just sized to make the most of the overhead bin. They're designed to last a lifetime, but if any part of your suitcase breaks, the customer service team will arrange to have it fixed or replaced ASAP. You can shop everything away at their stores in New York, Austin, LA, San Francisco, Boston, Chicago, and London. And we have a special offer for our listeners. awaytravel.com/vanity is the website. awaytravel.com /VANITY. That is a suitcase. Visit awaytravel.com/VANITY. Go get it.
And that was
ad copy.
Greg, what's our next headline? And listen, I'm just saying that like it's about oil and you follow the money.
What's happening? Suddenly we're on the Adam Carolla podcast. You know what I'm saying? All right. I made Anthony laugh. Good for the rest of the month now.
Wait, what's the last headline? You said this was your favorite one, and now you're just kind of like...
I was just setting it. I'm setting it up. I wanted to make sure I prefaced it all right because it's a doozy. It's about a military wife in Florida by the name of Veronica Alvarez Rodriguez, who recently stopped by a Goodwill on the way to a baby shower in order to buy a present. She's a military wife. She's getting it for a friend of hers who's in the military. She thought she was buying a baby Einstein baby bouncer for only $9.99. Thought it was brand new, looked like it was sealed.
Now, what is that? What's a baby bouncer?
A baby bouncer is one of those things that you put babies in and you can kind of like push them around. It keeps them standing up, basically.
Like they hold onto a bar and they can jump, kind of like use their legs?
Yeah, more like, yeah, you put your legs through the little holes and they're just kind of stuck there, but it keeps them upright.
Like a bungee cord kind of thing?
No, like more like a seat that they're sitting in a seat, but kind of like they can move around a little bit. They're bouncing around. You can leave the room and just like leave them in the bouncer, and they're not tied up or anything.
But like, they're not literally tied up, but like they can't get out of it.
It's like a seat.
You can leave your kid for the weekend, and he's not going to get into trouble.
The baby Einstein one you can, because it's just going to entertain the crap.
It's just
going to
make him smarter. You're going to show up, and your kid's going to be smart and thin.
She thought she had a value because this was only $9.99. She brings it to the baby shower, had just picked it up on the way, hadn't opened it or anything. And so when the father-to-be opened the box, unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, depending on how you look at it, inside was a semi-automatic rifle with live ammunition.
It was loaded.
It was loaded, had some live ammo.
And what was the response? I love the response when they opened it.
The response was, "You guys got me a gun."
Yeah, like they almost happy. Like, oh, cool. Like a baby shower. This is going to be boring.
He was very excited.
Baby Einstein shit, you got me a gun.
Yeah, because he was, it's a military guy, and he thought it was cool. It was a Mossberg 715T semi-automatic. Not a bad Christmas present.
What does the wife, what'd the wife think?
I don't know. Didn't mention her. Didn't know if she was even in the picture. It was a baby shower for a guy, which seemed a little strange, but who knows,
That is weird. I didn't know that at all. This was obviously a mistake. Someone like hid a gun in a box, sealed it up, and it ended up at Goodwill somehow. I'll tell you who I blame. The Saudis. This was a mistake, but I wish it wasn't. Like, I wish they just straight up got a gun for the baby shower and were just like, yeah, real shit. Like, imagine if I sent you guys a semi-automatic rifle for...
ammunition. It was just, like, bouncing around in the old box. They just opened it up and...
I'll tell you what. If I had gotten you guys a semi-automatic rifle, Walker wouldn't be having these sleeping problems. You know what I mean? He'd be hunting his own food. He'd be getting it done.
One of my favorite parts of the story, though, is that they called the police and an officer came over, checked their IDs, made sure they weren't felons or anything like that. And then they let him keep the gun.
What?
For now.
For a day. And then the next day, they had to call him back and be like, actually, yeah, you should probably turn that gun over. But I like that in Florida, it was the original police that showed up were just like, I guess it's fine.
Finders keepers.
Little crazy for a baby shower present, but go after it.
I'm surprised they checked IDs. Like, how mad would you be if you had like a parking ticket that was out and they were like, oh, we got to arrest you. You called to keep us safe from this gun, but you're going down.
I love the way that it was written is just fantastic. The last quote in the article is from the woman who bought it, and the quote is, "Goodwill has the best treasures for $9.99." You know, she said that like early on in her story, just trying to explain why she got what she got, and then they use it like as a joke tag at the end.
They're lucky this was military, because if it were like regular people, they would have lost their minds and killed everybody by accident. But military people know their guns, and they were, God damn. I'm looking at the picture right now.
The police photograph is amazing, because they put the ammo, and then they put the baby Einstein bouncer box right next to it.
Yeah, it looks like the baby can't wait to reach up and grab that gun. You know what I mean? That baby's going to love that gun when it's two. You know, when it gets the terrible twos.
My mom wouldn't even let us have like G.I. Joe guns or anything like that.
And look how you turned out. My mom, nothing but G.I. Joe guns. I was like, Mom, I'm into He-Man. She was like, shut up. Here's your gun. And now it's time for
Choo Choo
Recommendation Station. Greg, what do you got?
I'm going to go with Half of a Yellow Sun, which is a book by Chimamanda Adichie.
How confident are you pronouncing that correctly?
Less confident, because I did it off the top of my head. That's why I was hoping to like Google and just have the name in front of me as I said it, but I think I nailed it. It is a novel.
Half a Yellow Sun?
Half of a Yellow Sun.
Half of a Yellow Sun.
I thought of it partly, I read it, you know, somewhat recently, but I thought of it because her other book, Americana, which I also love, is on a lot of the best of the decades list that I've seen popping up, and that is an amazing book as well. Just kind of like a romance, an immigrant coming from Nigeria, and how strange U.S. is, and she's in higher education, and I love that. It's a love story. But I would even more highly recommend Half of a Yellow Sun, which she wrote a number of years before that, which is also a love story, but set in the Nigerian Civil War, the Biafran War. And it almost kind of reminds me of like Hemingway in a way, because it's kind of that old, it's like some classic like war and a family torn apart and battles, but also a love story, and it's just big and epic, and it's fantastic. But you know, in a much more modern, like, you know, 2000 from a 2000 perspective, it's set in the 1970s. But I can't recommend it high enough. Great narrative.
Every book Greg reads is it's just like a spin on Gone with the Wind. Oh. He loves that kind of story. It's a war and a love story at the same time. Americana is a book, actually, I bought a year ago, and I still haven't gotten to it. It's on my
it's awesome.
It's on my pile of books to get to.
It's really good. But I think you especially would love Half of a Yellow Sun even more.
I will. I'll read Americana first, and if I enjoy it, I will check it out.
You know why I said that this week, by the way? It's because it's the holiday season, and I was thinking, like, for book lovers, either one of those books, women, men, that's a good gift book if you're giving gift books.
Give me the author again.
Chimamanda Adichie.
Half of a Yellow Sun, an Americana. It's like it's Americana with a H at the end, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like spelled differently.
Chimamanda.
So check those out. Erica, you got a recommendation?
Yeah, I saw Knives Out in theater, which is a Rian Johnson film, and he did like Looper, which I thought was pretty interesting in itself. But I saw the billboards.
Isn't he the guy who did the last Star Wars?
He did something with Star Wars.
Yes, he did the last Jedi, whatever the fuck.
Oh, cool. I guess I'm not really a big Star Wars fan, but the billboard looks like a clue board, and so it's like kind of wacky, and it was a whodunit, but it had a really kind of interesting, fun way about it, and it was a really, really fun. And it's getting Golden Globes nod, which I did not expect. It was just more of like, if you want like a fun sort of movie,
it's got a great cast. I've heard great things.
Daniel Craig's accent is like it made me laugh out loud. It's so bad, but it was sort of like part of the kitschiness of the film. So it was really good.
Yeah, I feel that's the one knock, is his accent is so over the top. But I love Daniel Craig as an actor, and he did a southern accent in that movie where he's a bank robber. I forget what it's called. It was a great movie too. Anyway, one of my friends, my good friend Ricky Lindholm, is in the movie, plays a character's wife, and had a lot of like really cool scenes that she was excited about.
Who was she?
She plays
someone's wife.
Yeah, one of the guys. I forget his name. He's a weird actor. He has a cane in the movie, as if he's got like a.
Oh, yeah.
What's his name? Why do I keep forgetting his name?
This is great podcast.
He was in Star Wars, wasn't he?
No, he was not in Star Wars. Are you trying to look it up right now, too?
No, but I could.
Michael Shannon.
She plays Michael Shannon's wife in the movie, and her like big scenes got cut. I think she's still in the movie.
What's her name? Ricky?
Ricky Lindholm. R-I-K-Y. R-I-K-I. And she was like, a week before it came out, I was like, are you excited about the movie? And she goes, no, I found out my big scenes got cut out, and then told me who the killer was. And I thought it was hilarious. I was just like, okay. Were you still going to see it? I'm gonna wait for a screener.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go screener time. My recommendation.
Shout out to Ricky for her performance at Under the Silver Lake, by the way. Another gem on Amazon Prime. I'm just giving out free recommendations right now.
Yeah. I hear she's a lot I've of only fun. Seen the first couple minutes of it, but she's in
if
the first like, couple minutes of
if
it.
You like crazy LA movies? You love it.
You already did your recommendation. All right.
You recommended two books and then a movie.
It's okay. My recommendation, when I'm writing like I am right now, I'm trying to write as much as I can. I try to read as much as I can. And I love short stories, almost flash fiction, if you will, where it's like each story is a page long, a couple pages long. And I hit the mother lode with the collected stories of Lydia Davis, Lydia Davis. I've had this book for a long time. It's like 700 pages. It's every short story she's ever done. Wow. And it's so many short stories. And they're very, they're not like plot driven. They're almost like atmospheric. The characters are almost never named, but every one of them is very interesting. And they're only a couple pages long for the most part that I've just been tearing through this book and using it for writing fuel. So if you're a writer and you like to read a lot, like as you should as any writer, then I recommend The Collected Stories of Lydia Davis. It's
a legendary book, actually.
Is it?
It's sort of one of those books where she wasn't as appreciated early on, and then like her critical appraisal sort of came up. And yes, I think like among people that like love writing, like this book especially, like the collected works, like when it came out, had a huge impact, and people just think she's like incredible.
Yeah, I do agree that the reading the stories back to back to back like that, like really kind of shows her genius more than if you just read one of them, one or two. And it's an amazing Kindle book. Like if you've got it on Kindle, you can just fly right through it.
She was once married to Paul Auster. Who would know? Who would have known that?
Not me. And that was
Choo-choo.
Recommendation station. Now, Ellis, get us out of here.
Well, Nelly Furtado, that's a spicy meatball.
I'm telling you, the Saudis and George Bush got together. They picked a date.
Not W.
And they changed the world.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.